Now Kroger. Oh, Kroger got the right hand free.
He's loose with the right hand, and he starts to retaliate. And down goes Nyland, and the two of them are hammering each other.
Knights of Columbus, that hurt.
It's old time hockey.
Enforcer of all hockey podcasts. It's the biscuit. It's the biscuit.
Damn it! That goal regulation size of what?
The enforcer of all hockey podcasts.
God help the fucking day if fighting's ever banned. There's a country will stop working on some Batman's fucking can.
Hi, everybody. It's the biscuit podcast.
Hey, you want to go? Yeah, okay. Good luck, man.
All right, Biscuit Babies. I'm here with the legend, the author, the founder of the Probert Ride, and the wife of Mr. Bob Probert, Danny Probert. How you doing, lady?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you reaching out. I've been following you for a while now, and I was waiting for the call, so thanks so much.
Well, it's perfect timing because you got the ride coming up here soon. But I wanted to ask you, are you from the Windsor area, and were you into hockey as a little girl?
Well, yes, I'm born and raised in Windsor. I've had the opportunity of spending a few years up in Toronto and then meeting Bob living in the States. So, but Windsor is home for me, and I'm Canadian, so yeah.
Yeah, you have to be, right?
I got nothing right there, yeah. For hockey fans right out of the gate.
So the story of you guys meeting is almost like Kardashian famous at this point. I mean, if you're a hockey fan, everybody knows about the Plaza, 1988. But if you read the book, it's kind of murky because, you know, there's your side where you go, you know, Bob had all these girls he was asking first. And then Bob goes, you know, that's bullshit. Like, I only had Danny in mind. But I thought that was in Windsor, too. That hotel is actually in America?
No, he was staying, he was playing for Detroit, having some issues with the visa to go back and forth over the border, and he was just having a little bit of a hiatus, if you will, at the Relax Plaza. That was, it's on the Windsor side, and he just didn't want to stay at his mom's, because his mom's still in Windsor, right? So he was a big boy and wanted to stay at the hotel, and I was working at the front desk. That part's true.
Now, and he says love at first sight, and he really,
you know, I call bullshit.
So he was probably just churching that up for the book, maybe.
I you know what? We really did have a connection. I can say that. I think I was realistic going into it, knowing who he was, and you know.
That was my next question. So you did obviously knew. I mean, it was what, his second year being pro. So, but you knew who he was, being a Windsor girl.
Yes and no. I mean, okay, here comes this 6'4" guy and whatever, and he stands out, and he's a good looking dude, so that was
great.
But, you know, it wasn't, I really didn't follow the Wings. I was kind of just, I don't even know. I mean, yeah, I heard of him pretty much. That was it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was still very, very early on in his career, and I mean, unless you were, I know, you know, every Canadian loves hockey, but getting down into like junior hockey and stuff like that, you're not like a cave-dwelling dude like me where I'm like, oh, Bob Probert, he's got, you know, so many goals for the Windsor Spitfire, you know, that where it gets creepy.
Yeah, no, that wasn't me. I had no clue about the junior hockey thing. And I think it was 88 when we met. So that was his what? So, yeah, you're right, second or third year.
Yeah, I want to say it was pretty early on into his because I think he played a year for Detroit, then ended up going back down and then came back up and then never, you know, turned into the guy everybody knows where.
Right. Because, yeah, he was just coming off the heels of playing in his first All-Star game. Yeah, that was in 88, February of 88. So, yeah, he was on his way at that time, and that's in the fall of 88 is when I met him.
So was that the NHL All-Star pitcher where maybe the best pitcher of all time where it's
– Yes.
Oh, my God. I almost want to get that tattooed on my face. It's such a good – it's so good. It's him, Gretzky, and Gordy, isn't it?
You might really want to give that some serious consideration. I don't know. Do you really want to get that tattooed on your face? I don't know.
No, but that photo – I mean, how – and the thing with, you know, your husband, Bob, is there's all this, you know, talk about guys like him that play where they can't play the game, but Bob did the game, you know, better than most, and that's that solidifies it there. You know, that photo, you're just like, you can't talk shit about Bob Probert. Dude was an all-star with Wayne Gretzky and Gordie Howe.
Yeah, and he put up some numbers. He has like
he did
banner years with Detroit. He really did. And I know he used to complain about the bitch about the numbers that he had that 1 year. What is it, 398 VIMs and 29 goals. I can't even remember what the assist he had. That was his banner year that got him into the All-Star game, I think.
Oh, but yeah, like the greatest year in hockey history. I mean, when you end your career with, you know, almost 400 points in the NHL, you're doing something right. And especially when you have over 3,000 PIMs, too.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, well, was he would sign his jerseys, I think, including the playoff games, 3,300 PIMs. That was how he would sign it when anybody would want that stuff.
What a legend. What a legend. And yeah, he transcends hockey. I mean, there's and is that weird to have been married to a guy that was bigger than the game?
I don't know. I wish you could have met him. He was so cool. He was just was a big deal. And I mean, in our house and talking to him, no, he didn't see any of that. He just, I guess now, you know, you can look back on it, but living it, he just. He's very much about living in the moment, and you're as good as your next game, basically, or whatever.
Well, and then,
work hard, and I don't know. He wasn't about that. So I think that's what I really loved about him. He was just so humble, and that wasn't a topic for us to talk about.
That makes him even more of a legend. I listened to the Straight Outta Windsor episode you and one of the daughters were on the other day, and you know, I think is her name Tierney.
Yeah,
and she was saying, you know. It was weird for her leaving games, like, because so many people were interested in her father. And, you know, he wouldn't talk about that side of his life at home. So it was like, well, you know, why is it taking so long to leave Dad's job? And Bob would sign everything, talk to everyone, take every picture with a smile on his face. And that's rare and almost obsolete to this day.
Yeah, it's weird, and there's security now. Like, even for me to go, like, at the Joe or whatever, and some of the boys, when I would know them, would be leaving the dressing room and getting ready to go to the bus, the out-of-town guys, and you can't get to them. Like, and you're there. It's different. It's just, it's
kinda,
really changed.
It's kind of sad.
It is kind of sad, because I remember Bob walking out the West Gate, going to the parking lot, and the crowds, all the fans, and... trying to get from the back door to your car was next to impossible. And he never rushed through that. He would talk to people. I mean, sometimes he'd be starving and he'd want to get to a steak real quick.
Yeah.
But he would at least take the time, sign his autographs, take pictures. And in Chicago, all the kids were born in Chicago. His Chicago years leaving the United Center or going out for dinner and you're interrupted because people want to take a picture with them. My kids would kind of get ticked off. Like, what are you doing? Leave my dad alone.
Yeah.
They didn't understand it. They were too young. But
it's kind of a weird thing to describe too. Like, oh, well, daddy's kind of a big deal. You know what I mean? Like, if you're a kid, yeah. You just see your kid as dad.
I don't think my kids got that until we moved back to Windsor.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
think they realized it until they got back to Windsor. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I know I'm more familiar with his Detroit years, and it seemed like, and not that Chicago's much different, but like Bob was kind of built for a city like Detroit. Like the way he played the game, that effort he took to sign things for fans there, because in a city like Detroit, Michigan, there is a gloom to life sometimes because you're going to GM, you're working. You know, winter's hard there, not much different than Windsor. And the Wings really mean a lot to that community, just as the Blackhawks to Chicago as well. But it seemed like Bob was kind of, you know, this tough, like, legend, like, man's man guy there. So it was, like, perfect for him to go play in those two cities. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, let's face it, Detroit's an incredible sports town.
Right.
And... I mean, I love that city. We love living there, and it really was hockey town.
Yeah, it was.
But you're right, blue collar guy, Bob, blue collar town. They loved him, and he was real. And he, you know, like I said, he he was approachable. People liked to talk to him. He liked to talk to people and get to know them and hear their stories and ask them questions and stuff, which was great about him. So down to earth. It was funny with the Hawks, though, living in Chicago. It has great sports teams, let's face it. And it was a great sports city to live in. But Chicago, like some of the other major cities, New York, and that have teams, but there's so much going on. There's mm-hmm. actors and there's, you know, musicians. There's so much. The sports end of it kind of blends in, really, in a big city like that. So we kind of, you know, we had a little bit more privacy in Chicago, which was nice.
I can believe that. Because Detroit is, you're either at GM or you're watching sports. Chicago, there's a little bit more going on where you could get lost maybe a little bit.
Right.
And it was him and the fans. And then he also did a lot of, you know, not even just meeting fans, but he went overseas and met guys that were in war too, didn't he? And spent time with the veterans.
Oh my gosh. I think if he could have had a list for his proud moments, he went over to Afghanistan a few times and he loved it. Got to play ball hockey with the troops and hanging out with the troops.
Man.
He did some really cool stuff, and I'll tell you, it was life-changing for him. Coming home, he'd come home with all their gear, their bags, their backpacks, their stuff, because he was trading his hockey, all his equipment, to get their stuff. It was a riot.
Well, I'm sure he was like, oh, I'll give you this helmet for, a marine bucket or something like that.
Absolutely.
Of course.
That and firefighters. We have a whole couple bins, actually, filled with firefighter helmets and
that stuff will change, because my older brother is a Marine and he actually spent time in Afghanistan. And when I say time, he went to war. I don't want to downplay it. I guess I probably downplay it in my head because I'm like trying not to think that he was in danger because he's my brother and I love him. But some people went over and saw him. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. You'd have to ask him. But it means a lot to those soldiers just to get a taste of home, like. And to realize that what you're doing is bigger than just you got the guys there that people care, and guys like my older brother who joined to keep me here because I was a musician. You know, I was going on tour, and he's like, you know, I don't want dudes like you to have to get drafted. So he volunteered to join the Marine Corps, and that kind of sacrifice when guys like Bob Probert go over there and play ball hockey with them, that's something they'll remember forever. And I'm glad that Bob remembered it forever too.
Oh, absolutely. And the stories you could tell, and you get the guys together and hearing them reminisce about their, you know, a couple times over there. And I know the NHL alumni is fantastic with organizing those trips because it's not easy. There's a lot of logistics involved to get these guys over there safely and to meet with these guys and to cheer them up, talk to them, whatever it is.
Just seeing them changes their whole life.
Just seeing them, absolutely. And Bob would, you know, love talking to them, hearing their stories, and genuinely wanted to sit and talk to them. And these guys, you could see it in the pictures. Like, I just love looking at it. And there's guys that have reached out to me, you know, since his passing and share a story, share their pictures. And these guys, when they come home, I know when Bob was alive, he made a point of going and hanging out, like whether it was invited to a home barbecue or go have lunch or coffee with these guys. It meant a lot. Bob knew the sacrifice, like you said, what they were doing for our country, for us, that they're over there. And he just couldn't even see himself being anywhere like a big deal to go and see them. He just didn't see it. But whatever little bit he could do, he was honored to do it.
And it's something where, you know, when I had Scott Parker on, we had talked about it. You know, I think it's a lot easier for somebody like Scott Parker, or Bob Probert that sacrificed their life for something. It might have been a sport, but I think they have a better understanding of what those guys are going through because it's a completely different life when they're done. You know, and Scott Parker still has Parker's Platoon, you know, talking to guys that come home from war and veterans like that where – just that sacrifice to do something, you know. Yeah, one's playing hockey and one's going to war, but there is a thing where those guys have something in common that civilians like us just don't know.
No, you're absolutely right. I think that I think Bob was so fortunate to be able to go over there and see it firsthand. That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But also, and I think, like you said, with retirement and these guys coming home and just a lifestyle. Like, oh, just getting adjusted to that, right?
Right.
Just being back and
right. Because, I mean, it's not, you're not going to the rink every day. And then the guys.
You're missing the guys.
The boys, yeah.
Those are your friends. Those are your buddies. Whatever. You're just missing that routine.
Yeah.
And that's all you know for so long.
And then the entry into a different lifestyle
is like, wow. Yeah.
And then it just stops one day. You know, and it's weird that there's got to be, I mean, dudes like that are helping out a lot. And Bob also helped out even after he's been gone, and you know, with people with sobriety or CTE or just fans like me. Where, I mean, if you've seen the Biscuit logo, it's Bob Probert punching Ty Domi's fucking face off.
I love it. I'm staring at it right now.
or like my friend Fourth Line Voice, they have an online. It's like a enforcer tournament every year. So it'll be the second year of it this year, but it's called the Bob Probert Invitational because
I do that, you know.
Oh, you vote on it?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I told him, I was like, at the fifth year anniversary of it, you have to actually put Bob in the tournament just to let him win. But we had to leave him out because he's going to win it every year if you put him in it.
Right? I know. And I love people asking like why Bob's not in there or whatever. It's too funny.
Well, and it's so stupid too, because right on the introduction of it, it's like Bob Probert will not be in the tournament because he will win every year.
And I was doing so great last year too. I was nailing it. It was awesome.
Oh,
I had so much fun.
My daughter was actually born during it last year, so I was at the hospital like cussing at my phone, and my wife's like holding her new baby, and she's like, "What are you yelling about? Our kid?" I was like, "This fucking idiot thinks that so and so from Toronto could beat this guy," and she's like, "Oh my god, Cody, what are you doing?"
Oh yeah, no, I step away. I'll follow it. I like doing the little voting. I have a lot of fun with that, and I do these little shout outs when I can, and yeah, then I don't want to get all. I'm not into it as much now. I mean, gosh, I'm so far removed from the hockey world. It seems like I watch. You know, I got my playoff hockey going.
I was going to say you're not too far away because Friday I talked to you and you said, well, you know, puck's dropping at 8:15.
It is game time. I know. I couldn't believe you picked 8 o'clock. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's game time. No way.
As I said, that girl's too Canadian. I was going to say.
That's right.
Did you go to most of the games when Bob played, and was it hard to watch him fight and play the way he did?
Yes, I went to most of the home games.
Right.
I'm trying to think. A couple away games, wasn't really a big thing for us. I was lucky to be at the Maple Leaf Gardens for that final game and that last goal. That was awesome.
Wow.
And as for watching what he did and you know, on the ice and stuff, I mean, I guess there were a few moments that you're kind of like, I just sat in my seat. But my gut would always be, okay, he's got this, you know. I wouldn't get too nervous.
That's kind of the thing.
And then there were times where I'm like, yeah, like I loved.
Oh, yeah.
The McSorley 92nd, yo.
Oh.
February 4th.
Oh.
1994, that was awesome.
That was a thing about Bob's fights. Like, you couldn't count them out, and they were always these fucking marathon, like, brutal matches. And you start hearing the commentators like, oh, he's taking too many. And then – boom, Bob turns on about halfway through the bout and fucking takes care of business.
Oh, that was his thing, was the stamina, right?
Oh, he had better conditioning and the iron chin. He is the definition of it.
That's funny, because if you knew Bob's conditioning, oh, I don't know, that's funny that you said that. Back in the day, they would go do the countdown. We got a couple of weeks till training camp. We better start working out. Now these poor kids, they don't get a break. They're like...
No,
24/7. It seems like.
Well, I watched him do the hopscotch the other day, and I was like, "Well, maybe he wasn't conditioning too hard."
Okay, let me tell you something. That was not hopscotch. That was skip it. Okay?
Skip it. That's what the name of it is. I was trying to remember. I remember that
game.
Think
the big thing is he had those huge size 13 clodhopper feet that he had to squeeze into that cute little.
I'm surprised the thing went around his ankle.
I know. Me too.
That's probably what
we have video proof, so it happened.
That was probably the issue. It couldn't spin around his big old thick ankles.
Yeah, it was on slow-mo.
Because what was it? He's like 6'4", 230. That's a big dude.
He was a big man, yeah.
That's where, I mean, I cruise around at 6'4", an unhealthy 230, but I'm still a big, I'm not hitting the gym as often as I should, but I'm, I'm okay, but I'm a big guy. I mean, if there's a crowd of people, I'm like, well, there's Cody, there's William, the big.
Yeah, big, you stand out absolutely.
Yeah, and we had spoke before we started the episode, and I just wanted to reiterate, tough guy in our house, also known as the Bible, is a and it, not even just an incredible hockey book, just an incredible memoir of a human who was so honest and so almost to a point brutally honest about what he had went through and what he had done. Was that hard for you to ghostwrite that at the end of it? I know I had heard, you know, it was probably about 80-85% done, and not a lot of wives have to deal with losing their husbands, so it's I could imagine it was hard. I know my father passed away when I was 3, and my mother had to raise me and my 2 brothers by herself, and she just didn't really talk about it too much, and it seemed like it almost kind of helped the grief process, maybe, finishing that book?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it was, I've said it, I say it all the time, it was a blessing in disguise. Bob was so proud of that project, working with Kirsty, he wanted, and he was quite adamant on always wanting to tell his story, his way. And, you know, we had Kirsty living with us at our house, and Bob had gone out there. They had plenty of meetings, and once again, it's a blessing because she has all these recordings of him sitting around the table, us having family dinner together, all kinds of stuff where, so I get to hear Bob's voice in that, in those recordings.
That's awesome.
It is awesome. And also with him doing the book, I mean, yeah, it was like pretty much completed. I just helped out with the timeline a little bit. We had to clean up a few things. There was some stuff that, you know, he said that maybe, you know, we had to be careful with, because I'm like, okay, you're not here to defend that or, you know, talk about that when you're promoting the book or what have you. So, but yes, and going on the book tour, that was a real positive, healthy distraction for me at that time, because you really are in a fog and you're just, you know, I mean, the grief is overwhelming.
Yeah.
And just to get up and brush your teeth and get out of bed, I mean, that's a huge feat in itself. So, yeah, it was great that Kirsty really was positive and supportive in wanting to complete the book after Bob's passing, because she was worried that someone was going to come along. It would have been done, and it wouldn't have been done Bob's way.
It would have been wrong.
His stories.
Yeah, it would have been wrong.
Absolutely. They would have been done with all the bull crap that they had in the paper and the media and whatever else. So, you know, yeah, it was brutally honest, but that's what he wanted. He didn't want to hold back. He's said it, you know, around us all the time. I knew the truth. The kids knew the truth. So, you know, what he wrote out there in the books, it wasn't shocking for us, basically. And in hearing his stories and his big goofiness, I really do hear his voice when I read that book. I hear him telling the stories over and over again.
It's nice to read it because he is kind of a goofball a little bit. And
oh, no, not a lot. Not a little bit, a lot.
I've heard, you know, a few interviews with you or him where he's just like a big kid.
Yeah, he was. He was a big child. He was my, you know, everybody would say, oh, I have 4 kids. I'm like, no, I have 5.
And you
he
can
was the biggest.
And they always say, you know, a photo says 1,000 words or whatever they say. But in his eyes, you could see he was a sweet man. There's other photos where you could see you better get your face out of the way of his fist, but the ones where you can see it, it really looks like a sweet, caring man, and like just going out of his way to even meet the Hanson brothers, or, you know, just to do everything he did. That's why I wanted to get you on too. Not only because of the Probert ride coming up, but to help spread, if you haven't read Tough Guy or, you know, heard conversations with Bob or Danny, that he wasn't that, he wasn't just this guy that punched people on ice. He was
I have to even add on to that, like all the off ice troubles, issues, and you know, the demons that he battled. People tend to focus on that. It's like, well, I'm so glad we knew him. we knew the truth. We knew who he was. And my kids, we feel the same way. And there's this, the negative stories that you'll hear out there, you'll see comments online, et cetera. But
yeah,
we try to stay away from that end of it because we knew the real him. He had the greatest sense of humor. He was a really smart man. He was a borderline genius, believe it or not. He did the test, whatever. He used to be proud of his 146 score, so that was great. But he was just a funny guy, quick-witted, the one-liners, but also with this big heart that he would just do anything for anyone.
Right, and that off-ice mentality you could see comes on ice, too, where, you know, he cares about you and the kids and veterans, where he cared about teammates, too, and Bob was, and Bob was fortunate enough too to have this skill set as well, where you know some of the enforcers weren't given the green light or maybe didn't feel that they could do that. Where Bob, maybe Bob just said, you know, if I'm getting the puck, I'm going. I don't really give a shit if coach tells me to or not, because he's an outlaw. You can put him in the books with Waylon Jennings and Johnny Cash and all them guys. He's a fucking outlaw.
I love that you love him so much.
For sure. And I got to give credit. I was always a Bob Probert fan, but when I started to go to Flint, Michigan a lot, when I was, you know, right out of high school and was playing in a band and we were touring, and Flint would always book us, so we would go. But my two friends, Jay Dowd, who had tattooed in downtown Flint, and then my friend Coop, who was just an animal, but those guys, they'd say, hey, let's sit down. Let's watch Bob Probert highlights. Let's watch these games of the Red Wings. And they were so obsessed with it and so in love with it. And that's really what, like, I had always liked hockey, but that was, like, where I felt I caught that bug with them. And it was Bob Probert who did it. I was like, holy shit, this is incredible. Like, just
and the Bruce Brothers too.
Cool. I've got fucking four DVDs in my house that are the Bruce Brothers fighting.
Do you really?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
That's some good stuff right there.
Oh, we're me and my older brother are gonna edit some shit and put some good music to it. So keep your eye out for that. But
definitely,
because they're good. But I mean, we can make them better. And but one of my favorite fucking pictures is Bob with he's got his shoulder pads on, but he's got the real bad boy shirt on. That's best. That's the fucking best. And you're thinking, like, if you know at the time Detroit Pistons were the bad boys, and then love that like Bob and Kosher were like, nah, fuck that, we're the real bad boys. And I was like,
dude, I still have that exact shirt.
I swear to God, Danny, I've been looking for that shirt online and no one even remade it. You guys need to do it for the Probert Ride and like donate it to the Probert Ride or something. Just reprint it.
I would love to do that. You know, I work with the Mitten State a lot with all their t-shirts and stuff. And they came out with an awesome Proby shirt last year.
Yes, the Proby shirt with his face.
Yeah. And then they brought back the Bruce Brothers shirt, which was cool.
Yeah,
I think somebody's trying to bring back the Give Blood Fight Proby. Did you see that one?
No, but that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it is. And meanwhile, you're talking about Flint. So were you around when the Wings used to do I don't even know if they still do it, but they used to have training camp there in Flint.
Well, no, I wasn't around for that, and I never lived in Flint, but they will do like Detroit alumni versus Flint General alumni at the Perennies. So that's always really cool.
I'd like to get up there for one of those games. I love the Detroit.
Oh, they would shit if you went there. They would lose their fucking mind if you were in there. And
I haven't been there in a while. I just want to hit Salvatore Scalabini's. Is that still around? 75. That's my favorite.
I don't know. Every time I'm up there, I go to Torchburger and I go to fucking Coney Island and get a Flint Coney.
Yeah, you got to do a Coney for sure.
We got actually – my wife went home last weekend – or home back to Michigan, and she brought down some Abbott's Meats Flint Coney sauce because it's different. If you've never had a Flint Coney, it's completely different. So we're actually cooking some right now.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
How far are you again? How long of a drive?
Oh, from Flint, about 3-4 hours.
Okay.
Hey, it's worth the sauce. We'll do it. Shit.
Okay.
It's a freaking weekend, Danny.
I think I'm going to have to try it. Now I'm getting all hungry now. Jeez.
You're right across the fucking river. Drive your ass over.
I know. But I go to National. I do the usual across the border.
And then one of my biggest regrets, we were at a Flint Warriors game. And I walked in and I had like my mom's cut off sweatpants shorts. So like on me, like barely my butt cheeks were almost hanging off. And I had like my jean, I had a jean jacket on with no shirt underneath and I was hungover as all hell. And they're like, hey, do you want to go down on the ice and shoot pucks at, you know, in between second and third intermission? I was like, no, I can't do it. So my buddy went down, Coop, who I was speaking of, missed two of the three shots. We could have won a free hotel room that night. I should have took the shots myself. I'll never forgive myself. I think the kid, the promotion kid, well, your daughter does stuff for the Red Wings, doesn't she?
Yeah, but she's more behind the scenes with the fundraising end of it with the Wings, so...
Oh, so yeah. It was some nerd with a clipboard asked me, and I was just like, no, dude, I don't want to do it. And I should have went down there and just crushed it. Because we
could look at the opportunity you missed right there.
I know. That. And I was like, well, I'll be back at a Flint game soon. And I haven't been back to Perrini since then. I screwed up.
Gotta get back. Put it on the bucket list. Get back there.
Oh, no. We're definitely going to a Firebirds game this year for sure. Because they got an OHL team there now. So we're definitely going back up there. So Ice Guardians did a very good job, not just as a documentary about hockey, but just as a documentary period. And they really did a good job hammering home that, you know, Bob Probert is the greatest of all time, and then there's everyone else. And even the guys like, you know, George Parros or Scott Parker, McGranton, you know, all the guys that you know, or Ty Domi, even Ty Domi who had fought, you know, Bob. Everyone respects him as the greatest enforcer of all time. And it was really cool to see you get out there for the premiere and do that stuff. How was seeing that film and, you know, getting out there to do all that stuff?
Well, heading out there and meeting the Parkers, that was fantastic.
And the best family in the world.
That's our Colorado connection. That's our Colorado family now. I love them.
They are the best people in the world.
They really are.
They are.
Like, you got to meet them. You got to shake their hands and sit down and talk to them because they're just incredible people, and make you feel so welcome. And just immediately, you talk to each other over the phone or it's the long distance thing, but to be with them and it's be in their presence. Oh yeah, we have a connection. We're family. End of story.
Well, I love the photo of you and Francesca, you know, pointing back at the jerseys like repping your husbands. I thought that was cool as shit.
It was cool. Are we pointing or are we shooting like rude finger gestures perhaps?
Are you guys flipping the bird?
Yeah, you might want to look at that.
Are you guys flipping the bird? That makes more sense. That makes more sense.
Okay. But no, we had a great time and I love being invited out and included in that. And yes, Adam and his team with Adam Scorgi with Ice Guardians did a fantastic job.
Phenomenal.
It was just... a great documentary. I think fantastic documentary on the role that these guys had.
Right.
I think they covered everything.
They did. For the time that they were allotted to actually make a film that where people can sit down and watch it, it's perfect.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I loved it. I mean, Adam gave me the heads up there would be a shout out to Big Bob and I didn't know what you know, level, capacity, whatever. So I didn't know what to expect, so it was. I got choked up. I was bawling.
Oh, at that part, of I really course, was. It was of course. Emotional. I mean, if you don't mind me saying, as a fan, I'm sitting there watching it, and you know, I'm a big fan of Scott Parker and Adam Scorgi as well. And I'm like, I'm sitting there waiting. I'm like, well, where's fucking Bob Probert at in this? And then they started talking about the greatest of all time. I was like, well, here it comes. And then it came, and I was like, oh, there it is. Like they did it very well. How they were like, well, listen. There was this guy, Bob Probert, who could not only drop 30 goals, you know, in the net, but would beat the living dog shit out of anybody on that ice.
Yep, pretty much.
And it was perfect. And there was another moment that I wanted to ask you about, if you don't mind, where it was the last game at Joe Louis Arena. And was it you and Joey Kosher who went over to the penalty box?
Yeah, and Shelley.
And Shelley. And
Shelley was the one who had to undo the little urn thing that I had. We kept screwing it up. He was hilarious. But it was Chris Chelios and Joey was with me. Yeah. And it was after everything was done.
Yes.
All the ceremonial end of it. Yep. Everything was over. So we went in there, I thought was going to be a private moment, but not so much. But
no, yeah. I mean, it was surprising that they had left the camera on that long because we were watching it live. And, I mean, my wife, when I say she's a Red Wings fan, that's an understatement. That's, I'm pretty sure she loves the Red Wings more than me. But so we're watching it, and, you know, we see you, you know, get over there with Shelley and Kosher, and she goes, I think they just threw Bob's ashes into the penalty box. And, you know how TV is now, so we rewound it. I was like, well, that's absolutely what happened. Like, was
okay,
that?
Okay, first of all, to be clear, I didn't throw them. I sprinkled.
No, I yeah, I'm sorry. Wrong adjective. I'm sorry there.
Just to be clear.
Yeah, you didn't slap shot them in there. You did sprinkle
them.
No,
I didn't. No. It was, you know what? It really was a spur of the moment thing. I wasn't, I have a big urn of Bob. He's here with me because I wasn't prepared to do anything with him. And that's just, you know, that's something personal for me and I'll deal with that. But in due time, and when the timing's right, what we'll do. But anyways, I got caught up in the emotional end of it. It was really
it's a big deal.
A beautiful ceremony. It was a big deal. And they did a nice a montage of Karen Newman singing and just honoring the players that had passed. And it was beautiful. And I don't know. I don't know what came over me, but
Danny, it was
Shelley
perfect.
Was sitting next to me.
It was perfect.
You know what? I have no regrets. I know that if, you know, some people, I broke my own rule and read some comments, and there were a few really nasty things said about that. And that was a private and personal thing. I'm sorry that it was like, if I offended anyone, it was like after the fact, after I thought everything was done. But I was with my hockey brothers, Bob's hockey brothers, my hockey family, and the timing was right, and it had to be done, and it was just a little bit. In my little travel carrying case that I have of Bob's ashes that I just sprinkled a little bit. And it was emotional. We had some laughs, we cried. It was just, it was the right thing to do. And I, you know, my kids loved it.
Yeah.
They knew it was something that it was perfect. It was perfectly timed.
It was perfect. So, and for sure, don't apologize for it. Fuck people that have a problem with it. If you had a problem with that, you're not a fucking hockey fan. You can lick my sack. That's bullshit.
Okay, and I would say right then and there that Bob would have come back with, fuck them if they can't take a joke.
Fuck them if they can't take it, exactly. And it almost makes me feel bad for seeing it, but, I mean, it really meant a lot to Probert fans everywhere to see that. And I know it was unintentional for you to have it broadcasted like that, but it really meant a lot to everybody that was a fan of his. And not to speak for all the fans of his, but it meant a lot to my wife and to me and to see it. So, you know, fuck anybody that has a problem with that, you know, that people are fucking idiots. That's all there is about that.
I mean, like I said, I broke my own rule. I don't generally read the comments because it's almost like they want to bait you into commenting. And then there's a whole war that starts up with that. So no, I wasn't going to do that. But,
I just started getting good at that this year where I'll pick and choose, like, because The Biscuit is a little more risque than most podcasts about hockey, I guess. So, you know, you'll get a lot of fucking these hockey nerds to be like, blah, 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 blah. So I'll pick, you know, one or two a week and just ragdoll them. But I can't answer all of them. And it's a waste of my time to answer all of them, too.
Yep. And it's like I said, they're bored on that end or whatever, armchair experts, whatever you want to call them. And they just want to, you know, bait you into something that'll make them look, I don't know what. Right. I don't even know what it is.
Well, all they want is an answer from Danny Probert. That's all they want. Because all of them are fucking Bob Probert fans. Period. If you ever picked up a stick or laced your skates or went on ice, you're a Bob Probert fan. So don't believe their bullshit, because they're fucking lying to themselves if they got that idea in their fucking head. I'm not even trying to hear that.
Cody, I like the way you think. Thank you.
You know what I mean?
I got all the warm and fuzzies on that. Thank you so much.
Danny, I love you, girl. I want to the reason we're here, and let's do it now because it's coming up here pretty soon, the 8th annual Probert Ride. And it starts in Windsor, and it's just in Windsor?
It's just in Windsor, Essex County. It's a local, but 100-kilometer ride. It's a fun poker ride.
Whoa! What's a kilometer? I'm an American.
Okay, it's like 65 miles.
Holy shit, that's a long ride. All right, good.
You know what? It's not too long. There's some that are longer, but it's a It's a nice afternoon.
No, that's badass. I'm glad it's that long.
Yeah, you know what? It's nice. It's a poker run. We stop at a couple of neat local places here, and it's been a huge success. It just continues to grow. The support of my hockey family, you know, our sponsors, the volunteers, all the local businesses. I mean, it's incredible, and we're raising money for cardiac services right here in our hometown, Windsor.
And it's on June 24th, a Sunday?
Yep. It's Sunday, June 24th, yes. And kickstands up, we all meet up off of, it's not far from the bridge. I really think you should come out and visit.
What's the deal with letting people that have been in trouble in America?
How much trouble?
Well, I think we got...
I don't know. Do you have a hard time with crossing the border?
I've never been over. I've always been afraid to get over because my assault and battery was when I was little.
Hey, we're friendly, okay? You can come over. You need a passport.
Well, you guys fucking...
driver's license.
You guys, I have a driver's license, but they changed the fucking rules back in the day. You used to be able to go over with a driver's license. Now you have to have a passport to get over the bridge, don't you?
You need a passport. Okay, first of all, 9/11 changed everything. So, yes, you need proper identification, a passport, or an enhanced driver's license or a Nexus card. That'll get you across. No
problem. Can I swim across the river?
Yes, yeah, sure.
No, I know my wife.
Good luck with that.
I think my wife's good to go. I'm just worried. I think I've got like, I'm pretty sure my A and B is gone because I was a minor, and then I got leaving the scene of an accident a couple years ago. But I think I'm good. I think I'm good. I just gotta get my passport.
Just look into it if you want. You know, some phone calls and find out. They can bring up your. I mean, do you have a passport?
No, I've never left the country.
Okay, so once again, put that on your bucket list. Get a passport.
I gotta get to Probert Ride. That's what I gotta
do. You have to come out. You've gotta come out. Even if you just come out.
Especially this one. Wink, wink. We won't tell you why, but I gotta get to this one.
Yeah, wink, wink. You have to.
I do. Do I have enough time? Can you get like an 80-day one, can't you?
With what? Just, yeah, you can.
Well, I'm saying in June 24th, doesn't it take some time to get a passport?
No. Go get your pictures taken. Go get the thing. You should have that thing in a week. You can rush it, you know.
It takes a week?
You can get it in a week, sure.
Danny, I think you're fucking lying to me here now.
Am I the person that would lie to you?
No way. No way. You're a sweet woman. And so how many stops are on the way? There's like eight stops?
Okay, so you're going to come across the bridge if you can come. And Thunder Road Harley-Davidson is our launch spot. It has been for like the past 4 years. It's huge. We have a stage there. We say some speeches. You get to meet the road captains because we have two this year, which
Woo!
Is awesome. And then we have that's a little secret. That's
too. Y'all will like them. I guarantee listeners of The Biscuit, you will be excited about it.
Yeah, this is a good one.
She told me before the show. I can't tell you now. You guys,
big secret.
It's a big secret.
But we can
announce
it on May 30th.
So man.
Because the road captains will be in town for the big reveal.
And they're perfect for the Probert Ride.
Right? So where'd you get? Come on over to Thunder Road and do the lunch. Then we take off from there and we hit up the fort in Amherstburg. Then we go around to Colchester Bar and Grill. Then we're at the Wolf Head. And then we're back at Chicharro Club, which is awesome. And we just do like a lunch type thing. There's food along the way. It's a good time. We start off, it's like a parade-like thing from Thunder Road. Last year we had over 1,200 bikes. So cool. You got to check out the video on our Facebook page.
Dude, what's wild, Danny, is so I had told you that my father passed away when I was little, but he had died on a Harley. A deer hit him, unfortunately. But my older brother, my older brother bought that Harley 3 years ago from the guy that bought it from my mom. Because, you know, my mom couldn't keep the bike, obviously, for obvious reasons. So when
how tragic. I'm so sorry to hear that, Cody. I didn't know.
I was three. I don't remember it. It's okay. But so my mom, when she sold the bike to the guy, said, hey, if one of my boys wants to buy it, you have to sell it back to them for what I sold it to you. And the guy who bought it held true to it. And
that's incredible.
Isn't
How
that?
Awesome is that?
And I think it's a 1988 Shovelhead, and my brother bought it, and he just moved back from Louisville, Kentucky, so it's sitting in my garage right now. I'll send you a picture of the bad bitch.
Oh, you have to. I would love that. We'll post it on the Facebook page. How cool is that?
It's fucking sick. And then, you know, especially now since the ties of the podcast. But, yeah. Yeah, if we can get over there, we'll make it. And if I can't, do you guys do like an auction or giveaways or anything like that?
Yep, we have a silent auction. We do all kinds of prizing at the end of it.
Because I've got some not biscuit stuff, but Artillery Breath, the band I was in. I've got like koozies and records. If I can't make it, I'll mail them to you, and you can just give them away. Or, you know, if you can get money for them, get it and, you know, donate.
That would be fantastic.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I would really love to meet you and your wife. I would love it.
Hey, if we don't make it this year, Danny, we're coming next year, period.
No, you got to make it this year. You know why.
I know. This is the year to go.
This is the year to go.
Not that next year is going to be worse, but this is especially a good year for me to go and my family, for sure.
Yeah.
Fuck. I'm going to have to fucking go. We'll figure it out.
Work on getting the enhanced driver's license. A Nexus card might take a little bit longer. Your fastest road, I think, is the passport.
I think swimming is my best route because of my criminal record.
Okay, so here's the deal, though. We have a boat, so we do the whole Sandusky thing.
Come down here and pick me up.
Okay, right? So you need to get an I-68, though, and that's like
nothing. Meet me in Cleveland.
I-68, you can get it in 1 hour. Yeah, we'll get you in Clinton, exactly. Catawba, we'll be right there.
Ah, you're a sweet woman. Danny, I can't thank you enough for coming on. I really appreciate it. I know you're a busy lady, and the people are going to love this. This is beautiful. And thank you, and, you know, I can't wait to hopefully meet you one day here, hopefully at the Probe Ride.
Well, thank you for having me, Cody. It was awesome chatting with you, and I look forward to meeting you at this year's ride.
Hey, and
I said it.
You're definitely coming on every year before the Probe Ride because we got a lot of Probe stories to tell. I did good not telling any of them. I've read the book, and I know you know more than I do. So we got lifelong stories to tell here.
We really do. I look forward to doing this again.
Thank you, sweetheart, and tell all the kids I said hey. I hope to see you soon.
Oh, sounds fantastic, Cody. Thanks so much.
Yep, you have a good night.
You too.